Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hi, I'm Nancy Cartwright. You may know me better as the voice of Bart Simpson. On Simpsons Declassified, we're diving into the mysteries that keep the Simpsons forever young. Have you ever wondered how the Simpsons regularly predicts future events? Who better to ask than the show's creators, performers, and writers? The celebrity guests. Be sure to follow and listen to Simpsons Declassified wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. My name is Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on Twitter at jwright929ESPN. As always, you can listen on the radio, dial 92.9 FM, 680 AM. But if you're away from the radio and you want to stay up to date with everything happening here at the station, download the Odyssey app. Free to download, free to listen. You can stream anytime, anywhere. You can even listen on demand. George Ruggiero is the producer of the program. You can follow him on Twitter on X at KingGeorge94. George, good day, sir.
Howdy.
My company, as he is each and every Thursday on the program, writes about college football, college basketball for CBS Sports. You can follow him on Twitter on X at David W. Cobb. Cobb, good day, sir.
Hey, man, I haven't had a chance to formally congratulate you on Rory McIlroy's victory on Sunday. So congratulations, man. You lived that roller coaster. I mean, after Rory, I think you lived it about as intensely as anyone. So congratulations.
No, I mean, it was a great team effort. Really proud of all the work that we put in. And I've made the joke, like, I now know what the actual feeling of the gif of Frodo from the end of Return of the King when he's thrown the ring into the fire and it's done. That's exactly how I felt. Like, you would have thought, like, it would have been, like, jumping for joy. No, I was just like, it's over. I just collapsed. It's done.
That's how he was, too. So, yeah. In my mind, it was, like, you, Caddy, Harry Diamond.
Yeah.
And then.
I would say I'm a clear number three. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was a little surprised you didn't get a shout out in the post round presser, but that was fantastic. I'm still kind of buzzing off that now 4 days later.
Have you thought about where it ranks in terms of Masters?
Well, I saw you say 2019 still above it.
I'm trying to, like, obviously you can't divorce yourself from fandom. Like, I understand that. But if you're coming up with an objective rating, as awesome of a moment and story as it is, I still don't think it ever tops. Like, Tiger Woods coming back, winning that tournament in the dramatic fashion. It's like, it's at the end of the day, the winner does matter. It's historically significant, and then it was Tiger Woods. And then I think there was truly, like, Phil in 04, like, it just felt like that was the, like, that was, like, the best story you could have was him winning. And this one's awesome. Where I would say, though, if you're talking about a four-day event, like, because that's the problem. When you rank Masters, you're usually just ranking the final round. I do think, though, if you're saying, what's the best Masters four-day tournament, I will listen to a case for 2019. Because I thought, in terms of Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, every single day was a good watch. Now, part of that is also Rory. Like, Rory on Thursday goes from, oh my God, this is it, to, oh my God, he did it again. And, like, that was the story. Friday, he goes out, has another pretty good round, plays himself back into it. And then you had Bryson making his charge. And then Saturday was just an unbelievable day of golf. Like, it was just absolutely insane. And then you had Bryson, like, inviting the roars with him, like, so in terms of all 4 days being memorable, I do think this is the greatest Masters ever. But I also acknowledge we usually rank the final rounds.
So Justin Rose charging up the leaderboard on Sunday was pretty fantastic.
And I mean, that was an unbelievable round of golf.
It was, and if he had just kept it together on Saturday, he would have won. But
if he would have made on Saturday he averaged, I think he had something like 38 putts on Saturday. If he just two putts, he wins. If he just two putts every green, he wins.
Yeah, insane effort by him. Crazy they ended up in the playoff together. I made the question. I put the question to one of my golfing buddies, and he said 2019, and then he was like, well, if Rory had undergone a traumatic accident, you know, a la Tiger, maybe I'd say 2025. But my point was, Rory didn't have a traumatic accident, but man, he sure had a lot of trauma. And you like that, his reaction to it is partly why I would say 2025 has a case, because I mean, I don't think I've ever seen an athlete react that way, especially not in an individual sport, to achieving something. Like, his reaction was unbelievable.
Yeah. And I don't know. The thing about it was it was maybe a better viewing experience than 2019. Because when Tiger wins, it's usually pretty boring. Like, if you go back and you rewatch that round, most of the dramatics is not Tiger. It's not like Tiger went out and shot 67 and bypassed everybody. It was Francesco Molinari freaking out at 12 and 15. Brooks, I think, went in the water at 12. Finau went in the water at 12. And so really it was just like Tiger watching everyone collapse around him making a bunch of pars and getting out of there.
And whereas Rory had to hit some ridiculous shots.
Him having to hit ridiculous shots is because he hit some god-awful shots. Like,
he did.
Like, the shot on 13 is truly one of the worst golf shots. Like, but that's the Rory experience. You can go from the shot on 13 being one of the worst shots you've ever seen to the shot on 15 and being one of the best shots you've ever seen. And then you realize he's going to miss the putts on both. But still, like, that's the Rory experience.
Yeah, it makes you have a little bit of hope for Jordan Spieth, too, because you get that sort of experience with Spieth, except all in the same hole. He'll drive one into the woods and then somehow miraculously give himself a birdie look.
My only fear with Spieth beyond, I'm not sure health-wise, like, if he's able to get it back. But the problem is, it makes sense to me that the one major he doesn't have is the one that's just truly now. The PGA has just become a driving contest. Like, it's usually, like, go look at basically, like, every winner. It's usually a big ballpark set up for bomb and gouge, and, like, that's just not his game.
Yeah, right. Back when our boy Sean McKeel won it, was a bit more of a finesse sport.
Well, I mean, like, that's the thing. It's like, it played more like a U.S. Open. I think McKeel won it, like, 4 under.
Legendary shot from the 18th fairway at Oak Hills.
Oak Hill, baby.
Yep.
Oak Hill. All right, let's talk some Grizzlies. We'll get into that. Let's talk about what we got coming up on the program. Eric's going to join us here in about 30 minutes. We'll get his thoughts on tomorrow night's game after we talk about everything that we want to talk about with the Grizzlies. We'll get into the list. Cobb and I got to discuss Nico. Team Nico just needs to kind of go away. Like, they need to stop trying to spin zone this. Like, They're at the point where your only way out of this is to play well. So we'll get into that, because I think there's some details that matter. We've got some other sports news. There's a story in the NBA that I kind of want to discuss. It made me go, huh, and maybe I'll put on my tinfoil hat a little bit. Jason Smith's going to join us. Tiger basketball picks up a recruit out of the transfer portal. We'll talk about that and more with Jason. We'll tell your story, and then we'll get out of here. Okay, Cobb, so of course the number one topic of the day is, what's everybody rooting for? Is everybody rooting for, we now know it's going to be the Mavs, and it's now the question of, are you rooting for the Grizzlies to win and presumably play the Thunder in what will be what is highly likely to be a not very competitive series? Or are you rooting for the Grizz to lose and to keep their draft pick? And I think I'd said, I mean, I've basically been saying for a couple of weeks, to me, like, this is the worst scenario. The easiest scenario is everybody was rooting on Wednesday to win. win that game, everybody would have been fine. No one would have, this wouldn't even been a conversation. Go play the Rockets. Even if you lose the series, you beat the Warriors, that would have been fine. But here we are. We're sitting here with a home Friday night game in the play-in tournament, and now you're forced with this decision. I've kind of changed, and I said you can start to call me flip-flopper. You can call me John Kerry. That's a real timely 2004 reference for everyone out there. But I've now decided I want them to win. And the biggest reason that I want them to win is I've realized in my older age, and I'm only, whatever, 36, I just think that one of my biggest complaints with sports is I'm not as convinced, particularly in the NBA, the emphasis is not on enough winning. And yes, I think it would be better to go into an offseason with a asset versus no asset. I can totally get that. But what really flipped the perspective for me is, what if, like, in the end, I think there is a value of treating this and having the competitive enterprise being at the priority. And then even if you go play the Thunder, I still believe when you look at the roster and you look at the lack of flexibility that they're going to have, their best path to improving next year is to just get better. It's to improve internally. And a big part of that is going to be, what do you do in these high leverage basketball games? Do you find that, hey, this guy that we didn't really believe in, like, I think every rep Zach Edey gets in a high leverage basketball game is going to be a good thing for him. You know, do you start to figure out, oh, well, these guys maybe show up in these moments? And then I also think it's kind of big for, if Ja Morant can play well and, you know, let's say that they push this thing to six, even though I think that's extremely unlikely, but it's sports. What if? It kind of starts to change the narrative back to, man, next year, look out for Ja. You get a healthy Ja. If he has a big series and SGA has, you know, just a fair middling series, like, then all of a sudden we always overreact to what we see in the playoffs. Like, I think that it could start to, like, change the narrative. And then the other big part of it for me is I think this team just kind of needs some good vibes. And I think playing, if you can get yourself in the opportunity to play OKC and you pleasantly surprise some people, if you can get some vibes going into the offseason, I think that's important too.
Yeah, but there's also a really good chance you go out there and get swept in four relatively non-competitive
games. Oh, there's a good chance that it's four double-digit losses.
In which case, you go into the offseason with bad vibes. I mean, it almost feels like they should just cut their losses. Now, once they tip the ball tomorrow night, I'm going to be rooting for the Grizzlies to win. They can't be playing and me not want to see them do well. But the reality is, it's such a bleak uphill path, and this season feels like it's gone so far off kilter that it would take, like you say, them pushing that series to six games to feel like anything has been salvaged from it. Because at one point, what, a month ago, 6 weeks ago, you were number two in the West?
When you returned from the All-Star break, they were number two. And then that is truly, like, that's the thing. If you lose tomorrow night, in the span of the second half of the season, which is less than the second half of the season, but post-All-Star break, you went from the two seed to completely missing the playoff bracket.
These Grizzlies are like a 14-year-old dog that, like, maybe you could shoot them up with, like, an injection of some sort to get six more months out of them and a couple more walks around the block. But at the same time, aren't you better off just putting it out of its misery? I mean, that's yeah, sort of how I feel about them.
I'm with you. I still think, though, what we were reminded of Wednesday is, and I think this is actually a problem the NBA has, I don't know if there's a solution to it. I think there is a solution to it. It's to cut the season down, but they're never going to do that. So I don't know if there's as a pragmatist, I don't know if there's a real solution. But the difference between regular season basketball and postseason basketball is so stark that if you go a year missing the playoffs and then you start having this bad season, you start thinking, just put me out of my misery. But then you get to a game like Wednesday night and you're like, oh yeah, this is way better.
Yeah, I mean, look, as from a basketball standpoint, absolutely. You want your competitor, you want to make it into the playoffs, you want to show the narratives are wrong, you want to test a young Oklahoma City team that's pretty unproven itself. I get all that. From an emotional standpoint, though, from a fan perspective, if you're kind of out at this point, I don't blame anyone for being there, for being in that place. Especially, look, what do we know? Has Ja spoken today? Where is his ankle at?
Because this is a huge part of it. Because as we know, Reggie Miller told us he took his Advils. You know what we mean. What I said yesterday, and Gabe can attest to this, you can finish games when you take the old Advils. It's what is it the next day? Because oftentimes you've been playing, like, you don't feel it, but you're playing on a sprain. And so a lot of times inflammation can, like, really balloon up. I have no idea. I mean, I know this. That's the type of thing that if it would have happened in the regular season, he wouldn't be playing tomorrow night. But
he'd be week to week. He'd have been out for 6 weeks, and that's half the reason why they got here. They're so over-conservative with minutes, with injuries. They treated the regular season like you're supposed to treat the preseason. And as a result now, their best case scenario is you're going up against Oklahoma City in the first round. And that team looks like an unbeatable juggernaut. And, yeah, it's crazy, isn't it, to see the way things flip? The first 82 games of the season, if Ja has that ankle injury in the fourth quarter of the game, he's not coming back in. Done. He's done. Not just for that game, but for probably multiple weeks.
Yeah, I agree.
And, you know, wow, he could actually come back and play. He wasn't 100%. But, you know, I just think it's hard to flip that switch as a player, as a franchise, as a team, to go from, whatever, we don't really care. There's 82 games. We're just trying to survive and get to the playoffs. We're going to experiment with some new offenses. We're going to throw some guys out there. We don't really know what we're doing with Zach Edey, but we'll figure it out in March. And then all of a sudden, March and April get here, and you can't find the on switch. And that's the problem with this season. You know, maybe they can kind of find it now or catch lightning in a bottle, whatever, give Oklahoma City a run. But that's the best case scenario. They back themselves into a corner here, and it doesn't. I don't know, man. I'm just frustrated with the way this season played out.
Yeah.
And I'm frustrated with the direction this franchise is going, and I'm frustrated with it doesn't seem like there's a clear, obvious path forward. As you say, you take OKC to six, you get some valuable playoff run, you get Zach Edey some reps. I mean, you know, maybe in the long run they can point back to that and say, well, that was a beneficial thing for us. But sitting here looking at it right now, I just don't trust that to happen. I just don't trust them to not go and get swept.
Well, first off, it also ignores how good Oklahoma City is. Like, and it also ignores we have evidence that suggests they don't belong on the same floor with them. And I want to be very clear to everyone out there. I think that's true. Like, I'm not saying, like, this is going to be a Disney movie and all of a sudden we're going to be talking about the Grizzlies shocking the world. I don't believe that. But I think you touched on something there. I kind of had this thought the other day. You know, for all the flack that Tom Thibodeau gets for running his teams into the ground, and, you know, oh, look, can't believe the Knicks have injuries. Yeah, ha, ha, ha. I think I'd rather have that. You know what I mean? At least I know night in, night out, they're trying to win. And I think you touched on, Calkins asked me on Wednesday when we got back after the Warriors game, did I feel any better? Because I think that performance made Jeff feel a little better about the team. I found myself that entire game just getting irritated. Because I knew deep down, it's like, you're telling me you couldn't do this? Like, if they would have played like that, we wouldn't even be in the situation that we're in, which is just having this debate about whether or not we want to see them play a first-round series. And I think the biggest irritation that I had all year, and it's what you touched on, it just never felt to me like the number one priority this season was winning, and winning should have been the priority. You only had two seasons left guaranteed with these guys. Now, Jaren's entirely it's entirely within their own possibility. Jaren's going to be third team All-NBA, and he's going to have an extension put in front of him that he'll sign, and that will be done. Like, that's fine, but we didn't know that coming into the season. All we knew coming into the season is Jaren was going to be extension eligible, but the extension that the Grizzlies could put in front of him, he would be dumb to take. So that's all we knew. And they just treated the whole season like it was a freaking lab. And that just annoyed me. Whether it be the rotations, whether it be a new offense, whether it be the number of guys they're playing, it just never felt like all that mattered was that 48 minutes. And that's what annoyed me this whole season.
Now you're looking at what this will be the third consecutive season since they plateaued at 56 wins in 22, that you're going to have failed to have reached that standard.
Yeah.
That standard was set in 22, and it was supposed to go up from there. Not to say that you were always going to win more than 56 games, but that's where the idea and the narrative started to form that this young core could be the one to not just lead the Grizzlies to a Western Conference Finals appearance, which we saw during the Core 4 era, but this team might be able to reach the NBA Finals. We might be having a parade on Beale Street as early as 2025, at the latest, maybe 26 or 27. And now it just feels like we're trying to reclaim the trajectory we had 3 years ago. In this regular season, they treated it like, oh, well, that's the team we are. The team that we were in 22 is the team we still are. So we can kind of mess around, tweak some things, and then peak when it matters the most. And they never could. And what happened is everybody in the West got better at the trade deadline for the most part. They added pieces. I mean, look no further than Golden State, obviously. The headliner there, Jimmy Butler. He was the difference in that game. Meanwhile, the only thing the Grizzlies did at the deadline was off themselves of Marcus Smart. And now you look back at that in retrospect.
Hey, and they attached the pick.
For sure. They gave up a pick and a player.
Well, and the pick is why we're all sitting here going like, I don't know. Like, let's be real. If the pick wasn't involved, everybody would be on the page tomorrow of same page saying, all right, this season sucked, but win and let's at least see some playoff basketball. It's the fact that you have this one asset looming over that makes you go, I don't know, man. Like, what am I rooting for?
Yeah, and to see the team, you think back to, Jeffrey, I do, to the decision with Jake LaRavia. At the time, you were going based on the best evidence you had. You didn't know he was going to turn out to have the best season of his career. So I don't completely fault him for that, but in hindsight, both with Marcus Smart and with Jake LaRavia, given what's happened to Jalen Wells, given the just utter unplayability of Vince Williams Jr. and of G.G. Jackson, right? Like, all of a sudden, we're looking at Scottie Pippen Jr. like, hey, you got to play some serious minutes for us. And then defensively, on the glass, you're so vulnerable when you got Scottie Pippen Jr., Luke Kennard playing heavy minutes, Santi's at the four with Jaren at the five when Zach's not on the floor. And the team, it just doesn't make any sense. It's not a physically competitive team. There are skilled players out there, but from a physical standpoint, they're not playoff caliber. Which leads Zach Edey to being in a really uncomfortable position of having to be a superhero and play beyond what you should expect from a rookie, and he's clearly not ready to do that. So it's the whole thing. I know hindsight's 20/20, but there's a lot of missteps that you can point to that got them to this place.
But like, this is another irritation though that we're talking about. If this team had a bunch of guys in their late 30s, all right, I kind of get when the Lakers are trying to finagle and the Warriors are trying to decide, all right, what's the best path? I get it. They got a bunch of guys with miles. This is a team in their 20s. It's still the third youngest team in the league. They don't have a player over 30. Conchar's the vet at 29. And they still treat it like they're an old team that you're trying to coddle it and be very careful with it and make sure that you can get to the playoffs healthy. And it's like, if you're doing this in their 20s, like what's the point?
Well, it's different when it's, to your point, when it's James Harden and Kawhi Leonard, who are in their mid-30s, and Nick Batum, who's been out there for most of the 21st century at this point.
It's always shocking when you see the Clippers play, like, wow, he's still playing.
Because those guys know how to do it. They know how to find the switch. The Grizzlies don't. I think you're spot on with that. It was treated like a preseason, the first 82 games. And you know, that's ultimately what has kind of led them to this point.
All right, so we mentioned it, and you and I were discussing via the Everything app on Tuesday the Zach Edey dilemma. I totally agree with your fundamental point that you want to see more. I think it seems very obvious that I should expect somebody at his size to be able to dunk. I am completely with you.
Thank you.
The problem was It felt like Tuesday night was just open season on Edie, and I get it. It started with Charles, and I'm not saying that, the Warriors weren't hunting him on defense. I acknowledge that, but I also acknowledge it didn't matter who else they put out there. They were hunting those guys too, and the only thing that was actually getting the Grizzlies to get stops was on the off chance that the Warriors missed, he was getting the rebound. And we learned after the game, I was just of the opinion, the Warriors know the Grizzlies' defensive keys and their rules and when they switch, and they were just making sure that eventually Butler or somebody would switch on to Edie that he can't physically hang with. Well, we learned after the game, the strategy was we can't put Jaren on Butler because it'll get fouls, so we decided to use some fouls with Edie. And so it's like, that's a terrible setup to be in. But I just also acknowledge the only way that they were ever getting any stops was by him rebounding.
I'm not even mad about the defense on perimeter players. In no universe would you ever expect Zach Edey to efficiently guard Gary Payton Jr. or Jimmy Butler on the perimeter. They want to let those dudes shoot, fine. They're not great shooters. I actually didn't have any problem with that from a coaching standpoint or from the way Zach Edey handled it. You don't want him sprinting out there closing out on those guys. They're going to draw a three-point foul, or they're just going to go around him and get to the basket.
Yeah.
So, I didn't have any problem with that. What I have a problem with is Zach Edey's inability to finish at the rim. Zach Edey's inability to grab the basketball. Zach Edey's just overall sort of clumsiness with anything that isn't rebounding. And these are things that I don't know are going to change. I've made this point all along. The best version of Zach Edey at Purdue was a version that everything Purdue did was designed to get him a touch on the left block so he could go over his left shoulder with a right-handed hook shot and make a five-footer at the rim over a smaller defender. Well, there are still smaller defenders out there in the NBA. Quentin Post, who was he either second round or undrafted, who was a far better player in that game than Zach Edey the other night. And
well, he had shots. This is the problem. Because someone said this on X, and I think it's probably right. The problem with Edey is when you are that size, everybody's eyes are drawn to you. And, Post ends up hitting more shots. But, I don't know. I didn't see Post getting a bunch of stops either. To me, the thing with Edey is what... Do I think he can learn to be strong and go up with the basketball? Yeah, I think, my things are the stuff that he needs to correct or to fix, I think it's a lot easier. It's it mainly comes with reps. But the other thing that seems like with Edey, I think a big problem that he had the other night is it's almost like, particularly when he grabs an offensive rebound, he's just been instructed, get it back out. And so normally it's he goes up, he gets it, all the defenders collapse, and he's trying to turn and find someone to throw it to. It almost feels like he's going through a checklist in his head, and as he gets it's going slower and slower and slower, that's when people take advantage of it.
So he's 65.9% at the rim this season. Just for reference, Brandon Clark, 74.9% at the rim.
Well, Jay, he's 65% and he's what, 7'4"?
A bit of a problem, right? So Jonas Valanciunas a little better, 66.7% this year. Jared Allen, best in the league among guys who've played at least, 55, 60 games at 75.8%. I mean, you'd love to see Zach Edey above 70% at the rim. For a player of his size, I mean, first off, learn how to dunk the ball with two hands. We got to quit trying to make these follow dunks with one hand or these transition dunks with one hand. Go up with both hands, man. And if nothing else, get fouled. But so that's a little bit of a point of frustration too. But I think I'll couch it all with this, obviously. Without the injury to Brandon Clark, he's not being relied upon nearly as much. And then two, if the Taylor Jenkins coaching staff had figured out how to use him and incorporate him and build his confidence over the first 70 games of the season, maybe we'd be in a better position right now with him. But the thing is, the Grizzlies don't and never will, I hope they never do, orient their offense around him in the way that Purdue did. And so that pigeonholes him into only being effective essentially as a lob threat in the pick and roll and then as a rebounder. That's a very niche role. I don't think any franchise should be drafting a niche player with a top 10 pick.
Yeah,
and
I mean,
Zach
I guess
Edey has been thrust into a situation where he really can't win because, I mean, even if he maximizes and becomes the best version of himself, it's still not never going to be an all-star caliber player. And
I think
here
he
we
can
are trying to plug him in as a top 10 pick to a playoff caliber team. And it just feels like a giant miscast of, you know, what he could be.
Well, I don't know. There's a couple things there. Like, I think Harrington's made the point that he can, that if you compare his rookie year to Zubac's first year, the numbers are very similar. And it was the same complaints everybody had about Zubac, everyone has about Edey. Playing him off the floor, didn't look skilled enough offensively. Like, I do hold out that he can get better because the stuff that I'm asking him to improve on, not me being the coach, but in my head, I think it's all somewhat correctable. It's a lot of more of like skill, and honestly, it's a lot of reps. And
well, it's a coaching staff that actually has a firm plan on how to use him as well. And I'll say at this point on Zubac, he was 19 as a rookie.
No, I agree he is an older rookie, but I also think it's just such a different world in the NBA. Like, it's a different caliber of athlete. And do I have hopes that he's going to be an all-NBA player? Like, no, but I think the things that I wanted him to be, I still think are within the realm of possibility.
Yeah, I mean, the flaw, there are other flaws. There are so many other problems. And most of the qualms that we have with Zach Edey, again, I don't blame Zach Edey for. He's the exact player who I thought he was going to be. And, you know, the reasons why I didn't think he was worth a top 10 pick are exactly the reasons for the frustration that you see with him now. Those frustrations are just magnified because he has the label of having been a top 10 pick. I mean, take your pick. Team defense, team rebounding, excessive fouling, turnovers. My gosh, Jeffrey, the turnovers, man.
Like, honestly, I know everyone's focused on the 5-second call. I don't know how you felt, but I thought the game ended when the Grizzlies got the stop. They're in transition.
Yeah, tried to lob it up to Edey. Yeah.
I thought he was trying to do like a very casual like bounce pass or something. Like it.
I remembered it as a lob. I was also like rage watching this game and like can't be
that
trusted.
Team. Well, someone else made this point today on Twitter. We had a Jeff Calkins Show poll, and this might also affect how I'm thinking about it. Do we really want to see Klay Thompson win another game against the Grizzlies and knock him out?
You know what's crazy is like Kyrie Irving is out, but like this Dallas team still has Anthony Davis. They still have Klay Thompson. I'm not saying they're
no. I'm with you.
Like, I'm not saying they're going to go and challenge the Thunder if they were to beat the Grizzlies, but it's not like this is just some.
This is not an average like team that was four games under 500.
Correct. Yeah. So it's, I don't know. Once the ball is tipped, I'm going to want them to win. I want them to go and challenge the Thunder, shock the world. I just don't have faith. I just don't have confidence. And I think that's where I'm at. And I think where a lot of Grizzlies fans are at, in a different place with this team than they have been for the last 4 years. Something needs to happen to restore the faith.
No, I agree. They vibes need to change. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, Eric Hasselstein joins the program next, right here on Jeff Rett and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Hi, I'm Nancy Cartwright. You may know me better as the voice of Bart Simpson. On Simpsons Declassified, we're diving into the mysteries that keep the Simpsons forever young. Have you ever wondered how the Simpsons regularly predicts future events? Who better to ask than the show's creators, performers, and writers? The celebrity guests. Be sure to follow and listen to Simpsons Declassified wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
That music means we welcome the Memphis Grizzlies radio announcer, of course, play-by-play announcer. Eric Hasseltine joins us each and every Thursday on the program. Eric, were you rooting for Sacramento or Dallas?
Oh, I don't know. I don't think I was. I really had a care. I just wanted to see how they were playing. The one thing I know about the Kings is Zach LaVine, DeMar DeRozan, Domantas Sabonis fall in the category of certified Grizzlies killers.
Yep.
And have for their entire careers. Anthony Davis.
Multiple teams, too.
Yeah, Anthony Davis is the only one. What's in the guard is Brandon Williams, right? That
yep.
they have from out of Arizona.
Well, we also forget 31. They have Clay. I always forget that.
Yeah, but he got hot last night, but he has not, to me, looked the same. I mean, it's understandable. Man ruptured an Achilles and blew out his knee, and I was actually at the game, the finals game, where he blew out his knee and saw it, and I was, like, mortified because I was just like, yeah, that's not supposed to turn that way. I didn't really have anything. They both bring different things to the table, in my opinion. You talk about Dallas, they bring a ton of size. When you're talking about Gafford and Lively, who's a really good young big, and Anthony Davis, they can just go big. And their starting lineup last night showed that, with Lively and Davis in there with P.J. Washington and Najee Marshall and Klay Thompson. I'm like, dude, everybody's 6'6 and bigger. That's tough to match up with. And then you look at Sacramento with, you know, the mid-range game for DeRozan and LaVine, who just can really get cooking, and Domantas Sabonis' physicality. Keegan Murray can hit threes. You're like, okay, pick your poison. I didn't really have a preference one way or the other.
We got a little bit of an update. According to the guys that are, I guess, Tomas is speaking right now, Ja Morant did not practice today, and he will be a game-time decision. I mean, Eric, I do feel like everybody's kind of discussing internally, like, what are they rooting for? I do think that's the biggest question, right? Does Ja play?
Yeah, that's a massive question. It changes a lot of things. But I don't know how anybody thinks that you're rooting for holding a draft pick and not making the playoffs. Like, they've – I know the endings, the final scores with Oklahoma City – for all of them have been double figures. However, I know in at least two, and I would venture to say three of the games, there were times where you're like, okay, they're right in this thing. They just have to eliminate mistakes, and they have to defend a little bit better. And that's why Oklahoma City set a points differential record. They know how to keep coming and keep coming. And that's kind of, you know, Brevin and I chat a lot, you know, via text during timeouts, because we're not sitting next to each other. And I think that was one of the texts I sent to him that night, where the Grizzlies got the lead late on the Jaren three. What did they go up, 99-98 or something?
Yeah,
like
I think
that.
That's right.
And I said, man, they just keep coming. And even Brevin said it's remarkable. Like, their level of tenacity and the way they just keep attacking, the guys they bring in, their depth. I mean, you're talking about Case and Wallace and, you know, Aaron Wiggins, guys that I think are starters. They're that glue guy starter on another team, and they're not starting for Oklahoma City because you have Shea and you have Dort, who's your starter, and you have Jalen Williams and you have Chet Holmgren, and you can even bring in Hartenstein. So they're just loaded. And that was part of the deal. We knew this was coming. You know, at some point, Sam Presti was going to use all these draft picks he kept acquiring and just start taking shots at guys and see who sticks and who doesn't. And I think they've done the job of moving forward off of guys that they didn't see fitting and kept the guys they did. But I don't know, going back to the original point, how you go out there and go, yeah, we really don't care if we win and go to the play. You got to go to the playoffs if you can go. You just never know. Like, what happens if Shai Gilgeous-Alexander lands on a foot? You don't want anybody to get hurt, but if he rolls his ankle, he's out for the series. What, it, you know, nobody thought Mike Conley would break his face in Portland, and he did, and that series was already over, but you had to go to the next round, and you knew the Warriors just gained a massive advantage. Tony Allen strains his hamstring, and now you got Allen and Conley either out or playing very limited to their 100% potential. So
well, Westbrook with the meniscus.
Oh yeah, to this day Patrick Beverley is just loathed in Oklahoma City. And here's the funny thing about that one, by the way, when we get sidetracked, everybody was like, "Oh, I mean, if Oklahoma City hadn't lost Westbrook, I mean, they would have just boat raced." I'm like, did anybody realize the Grizzlies beat them 3 out of 4 games that year, and Westbrook played in every single one of them? In fact, they were not afraid of that, because Westbrook, they would get in his head, and we called it Bad Russ. When Bad Russ came out, like Angry Russ, where he'd just start shooting, we were like, no, please continue. Like and just keep pushing that button. It's like the kid in kindergarten that knows he's under his buddy's skin and just keeps needling him until the kid just loses it, right? And so you never know what could happen. And in all honesty, I just think, yes, this season took a really different turn. The schedule got much tougher. We talked about that going into the All-Star break. But I think if you go and you're competitive, even if you got swept, but all four games are relatively competitive, you might have one in there that's not. But, I'm not saying that it's a guarantee they're going to get swept. I mean, it's not like Oklahoma City is unbeatable. They're very, very good. We know they're the favorite to come out of the West, but I'm not saying that someone couldn't rise up and get them. And why not? If they let their guard down, this is the NBA. It's happened before, and it happened, for different reasons at times. And then everybody says, oh, well, San Antonio was hit. Well, the Grizzlies beat them. It took a Gary Neal 35-footer in game two for the Spurs to avoid dropping the first two at home. And yeah, Manu Ginobili didn't play in game one, but he played in game two and the rest of the series, and the Grizzlies 1-6. You take one on the road and you set yourself up. Now it's a series. If you win on the road, it becomes a series. So I'm all for going to the playoffs. I just think that's the better move. I think everybody's sitting here going, yeah, but they'd get to keep their draft pick. Okay. That's not what this team is lacking right now. Young players with potential and ability. Right now, they need a veteran voice. They need a guy to bring it all together and kind of get them on track and to eliminate the little mistakes and critical moments that are plaguing them. And it's part of the process. But it's as a fan and even sometimes as an announcer, because believe it or not, and I'm sure everybody does believe it if they listen, I'm also a fan and I want the best for them. So seeing a bad pass in a critical moment or whatever, you're just like, you can't survive doing that. It's not trying to pick on the guys, it's just being honest. Like, you do that to good teams, they're going to take advantage, and that's what's been happening to them.
Okay, you talked me into it, Eric. Like, that was the pep talk I needed to get fired up about maybe what the Grizzlies could do in a potential series with OKC. I am curious, though, first, kind of what was the atmosphere like at Oracle Arena for this
Chase Center.
Sorry, Chase Center. And then sort of what do you expect from the forum with such a quick turnaround from a ticket purchasing perspective? What is the atmosphere, the aura inside the arena kind of for these play-in games?
It was a playoff atmosphere. And the game was called like a playoff game. The fans were rocking. I mean, Chase Center's always sold out, but they were going. And they were on the officials. There's no love lost between the two teams. We had some good-natured, razzing when we were walking around town and people seeing the Grizzlies gear and stuff out and going to dinner. And I have a tradition when I go to San Francisco that I try to go to the Buena Vista for an Irish coffee, because my father, after I moved to Tennessee, said, I want when you come back, I want to take you somewhere. And so before he developed dementia and passed away eventually from that, that was our thing. And so I always go, even if I go by myself, and I've gotten to know some of the guys at that establishment, and they always like, oh yeah, Memphis, welcome back. You may want to watch us make your drink, because we may be slipping something, like kidding around. And it's a healthy respect, and there's a little bit of dislike for certain guys, but that's part of this. So it was great. And I hope it's the same tomorrow night. I think there's a healthy respect between the two organizations playing tomorrow night. It's a different look to the Mavericks, obviously, since a couple of trades that Yeah, I didn't hear anything about that. Did Luka Doncic get traded? No, I didn't hear this in the media anywhere.
They haven't talked about it at all today.
With the Mavericks and playing in Los Angeles all of a sudden. But I think that I think the Grizzly fans will show out. I do. I think it's been obviously a tough run. They did what they're supposed to do, but you know, everybody talking about this season is like an unmitigated disaster. I'm like, yo, they lost three games in a row on a last second possession. That you can't go back and rewrite it. But let's just hypothetically say they had won those. They're the three seed. they're right there. They're right there, and they let games slip away, and that's part of the learning process. So I don't think fans should be too down on this. Yeah, it's a little bit disappointing because at one point you were 36-18, and you're thinking, okay, this is an easy 50-win season, should be no problem, but because that's all you had to do was play 500 basketball. And you thought they're good enough to do that, but injuries. And I don't think they're giving enough credit to the Brandon Clark injury and now the Jalen Wells injury. Those are two of the four better defenders you got. In late game situations, Brandon Clark had two great defensive plays against Minnesota. Jalen Wells was consistently taking one of the other team's top players and making it at least somewhat difficult. The only anomaly in that was the Golden State game, and that poor kid needed an ice bath after because Draymond Green was just hitting him like an armored truck every time he ran by him. So those are big losses, but I think the fans will come out. I think it's going to be a fun atmosphere. And you hope Ja can go, but if you can't, you got to play through it, man. There's no excuses at this time of year. You play to win, and you know everybody that's ever played poker knows all I need sometimes is a chip and a chair. So give me a chip and a chair in the playoffs, and I'll roll my dice. And if Oklahoma City wins because they're the better team, so be it. But I'd rather be there than not, and I don't care if you lose your draft pick because of it. I understand some people will look towards futures. But there's always ways to acquire draft picks. There's always ways to go get other players. You don't get playoff experience other than getting to the playoffs.
What did you think was the biggest difference between the first and second halves on Wednesday or Tuesday?
I thought they came out and Golden State just took advantage of every mistake to build a 20-point lead. I thought there was times where. I'm trying to phrase it so it doesn't sound, again, like I'm going after the guys because it's a tough spot to be in. But it looked like at times you're making plays almost like you're going through the walkthrough.
Yes.
Like it's so on autopilot because you're used to doing it and you're comfortable in it that you forget that your opponent is about to really crank it up and it maybe just escaped them for a minute. It happens to a lot of teams. It's not foreign to other teams and only, common for the Grizzlies, but they had a couple of passes where, and it was critical moments during that run where they built the lead where they got even more fired up because they had the momentum and now they're going to turn up the intensity a little bit more and you throw a lazy pass or you get trapped right across the midcourt line in what we call the coffin corner right there. You can't do that. And you throw a pass to the wing that you just go, okay, here you go, and they jump the passing lane. You don't seal off a guy. You try to run a fast break and throw an alley-oop through three guys. It didn't make sense, some of the decisions that are the mistakes that have been happening to this group. The thing that impressed me the most, and I think they took huge steps in the right direction to being the team we believe they can be, they didn't let go of the rope. They got back in it. They cut the lead, I think, to 12. By the end of the first half, which was a good number. It could have been better. And then as Golden State started to push in the third, they locked back in. They got that intensity back. So maybe just getting that frustration of being there and thinking, we could have easily avoided this, and then getting that through their system. And now you're in a battle. And I heard you guys talking this morning, Jeffrey, with Jeff about the 2 minute result. I did think that Zach's was really close to a goaltend. They said it was. I didn't think Scotty got fouled. I agreed with that Pajemski call, but I couldn't quite tell in real time. And we were the one where they put Curry on the line, but it should have been
out of bounds.
Yeah, but then you go back to that, and they might call approximate foul anyway.
Yeah, so, it was one of those ones when they even showed it. They only because it happened quickly. Mm-hmm. TNT only showed one replay, and I don't remember thinking like, oh, they should have taken a look at that, or I know, like, that's the other thing. I was Cobb that because we're just gotten out of college basketball, we're so used to every time the ball goes out of bounds. Yeah, yep. All right, here's 90 seconds. Like, mm-hmm. I just didn't think when I saw the angle, it didn't make me think that oh, that should be the Grizzlies' ball. But I get it.
Right. Yeah, and I think also what you saw was two teams that challenged plays. And when they challenged them, I was like, I don't know that I'd challenge that
well,
one.
Well, I got a take on the Grizzlies' challenge. You ready?
Okay, yeah.
I think he was trying to buy time for Jaws Advils to kick in.
That's possible. Yeah, that's
because you can see on the TV copy, and I know you're in the building, but Jaws gone over and he's taking his Advils and he's doing the move where you know you're working your leg to think yeah. that maybe somehow it'll like make it go to the bloodstream faster, like somehow
yeah, exactly.
that's what science says that's gonna work, but we all do it
right,
and you can tell like the staff is like going back and like, are you there? Are you there? Are you there?
Yeah.
And I'm convinced it was one of those. I think it was two things. I think it was there's probably a little bit of an emotional challenge. Like you just, it's a yeah. more of a football coach thing where you didn't like the result, so you throw the challenge flag.
Right.
But I also think that like it was close because I think Ja came back right after that, and so I
yeah.
think he was trying to buy time.
And you look at the play.
Yeah.
First of all, like he 100% they hit Edie's forearm with the ball. But they said he made contact with the wrist before. And then Draymond tells Steve Kerr to challenge. And I'm like, yo, dude, you're going to lose that challenge. I tell you, like, Draymond jumps into him. And Michael's like, what? And I go, watch his angle. He jumps angling into the body and makes contact first. And then, yes, he gets hit. But or he gets the ball and then follows through. But he 100%, it wasn't a plane of verticality. You can't jump into their body. So, those were critical. When you lose those, I think the Warriors wanted to challenge the Pajemski thing. They couldn't. Grizzlies wanted to challenge the other play. They couldn't. So that's part of it. So, you know, again, going back to all of it, I thought that the second half they locked in, but again, critical mistakes. And, you know, Steph Curry did Steph Curry things. He hit two ridiculously difficult three-point shots, and you chased him, and you weren't far off, but he needs very little space. And when you come down and you nearly get a five-second call and then you come to the next one, that's where I thought they made a mistake. And all year I've felt like sometimes on those out-of-bounds plays, and I'm not saying they're all after timeouts, but after on an out-of-bounds play, they call a play, and there's not the sprint to set the screen. There's not the sense of urgency. It's like, okay, we're going to run this. And you're going one, two, three, and I'm sure you've heard me many times, so you got to get it in.
No, and we played your, because Jeff came in on Wednesday, he goes, because that obviously wasn't going to be a highlight clip that Wes, the producer, sends us.
Yeah.
He goes, I got to hear Eric's, what Eric said. We went back, because like, you really were the voice of the fan. But I was even thinking back to this. The same thing cost him in the Golden State game at the end of the regular season. Remember, mm-hmm. they had the play, it ends up not being a five-second call, but they take a timeout. Because
yeah.
they can't get it in. And then yeah. it ends up being a turnover because they did just throw it and just was airmailed.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Hi, I'm Nancy Cartwright. You may know me better as the voice of Bart Simpson.
On Simpsons Declassified, we're diving into the mysteries that keep the Simpsons forever young. Have you ever wondered how the Simpsons regularly predicts future events? Who better to ask than the show's creators, performers, and writers? The celebrity guests. Be sure to follow and listen to Simpsons Declassified wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused,
is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.